Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, where tour players, legends, and the top instructors in the game share their stories, insights, and playing lessons. Join Chris every week as he talks with the greats of the game.
You are the smartest guy I've spoken to on radio or television in my career.
Chris, again, you're knocking out of the park. You're like 8 under par in this interview.
By having any research, I'm hiring your tail to be the research man. You're the best.
You're a fantastic host and tremendously respected in the golfing community.
Yeah, Chris, you do an amazing job, and your listeners are super lucky to have you, and it's always my pleasure.
Chris Mascaro is the king of the golf podcast. Don't miss him on Tuesdays.
Now, here's your host, Chris Mascaro.
Hello, folks, and welcome into this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and welcome to the Players' Championship Week. It may be the fifth Beatle, but it certainly is an important week for the PGA Tour players. It's a fun tournament for us all to watch. How exciting are the three finishing holes at TPC Sawgrass? Boy, 16, 17, obviously, right? And even 18 is such an intimidating drive. I love watching how that tournament closes out. It's the one tournament each year that the tour players collectively host. I want to give you a quick history of the players. It was held back in 1974 for the first time, not at TPC Sawgrass, but in Atlanta at the Atlanta Country Club. What they did for those first 3 years was they played the players instead of a regularly scheduled tournament. In this case, they shelved the Atlanta Classic that first year and they called it the Players' Championship. Took place over Labor Day weekend, so towards the end of the season rather than early on like it is now. It was won that first year by Jack Nicklaus. In 1975, it took the place of the Colonial National Invitational, and then in 76, it was played in place of the Jackie Gleason Inverary Classic. All three of those tournaments would get back on the schedule the following year. In 76, the tour agreed to move the tournament to Sawgrass Country Club up in Ponte Vedra, Florida, and to play it in mid-March. When the stadium course was ready in 1982, the tournament was permanently moved over there. Only five players have won the Players and a major in the same season, and those five players are Jack Nicklaus, Hal Sutton, Tiger Woods, Martin Kaymer, and Cam Smith. Scottie Scheffler is attempting to join that club and also to become the first player to win it in back-to-back years, and I wouldn't bet against him after that dominant performance in the final round and a five-stroke victory last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So it's a big week on the men's tour, and I couldn't be more excited to watch the tournament this week. Okay, on to this week's show, and my first guest is a former Players' Champion. He won it on the final hole in 1986, and that's John Mahaffey. John and I are going to take a walk back and look at the early days of the Players, what he remembers about trying to tame the die course early on in the 1980s. We'll also talk about dealing with the swirling winds around the 17th hole and how those actually compare to the swirling winds we see at the 12th hole at Augusta National. Always a good time when John is a part of the show. He'll join me here in just a few minutes. Following him, I'll visit with the manager of preferred player promotions for Titleist, Michael Gibson. Michael is going to help us understand how to find the right golf ball for our game, how to understand the right wedge bounce and grind for our game due to the local turf conditions, and where he developed his passion for doing absolutely everything he can to help people play better. Looking forward to having Michael as part of the show. He'll join me about 25 minutes from now. Following him, I'll get a visit from David Turner. David is the developer working with Nick Price and David Ledbetter on a state-of-the-art new private golf club down in Myakka, Florida, which is just a little east of Sarasota. It is called the Saletta Golf Club. It's going to be one of the best private clubs anywhere in the world. I bet you see it at the top of the list for best new private clubs next year in Golf Digest or Golf Magazine. We'll hear all about it when he joins me a little bit later on in the hour. And then we'll round things out with a visit from Poptical CEO Gary DeSalvo. Popticals, folks, are the best sunglasses I've ever worn. They are amazing for cutting out glare and improving how you see things and for your depth perception, which you'll hear Gary talk about a little bit later on in our conversation. Their lenses are so great at blocking out glare. They actually help you read the greens better. Plus, they fold down small and fit inside a hard protective case so they won't break or get scratched if you store them in your golf bag. I'm telling you, you're going to love these sunglasses. You'll hear all about it when Gary joins me about an hour from now. So we're going to have a lot of fun on this week's show. And as always, I can't thank you enough for tuning in and taking the journey with me this week. Before we get started with this week's show, as I've been saying to you guys all season long, our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry, and I have been working with a company called Kickpoint, and they have done some magical things with our logos and created some polo shirts with some wonderful designs where they take our logos and turn them into designs on a polo shirt. They're absolutely outstanding. Kickpoint Golf is a private label custom golf apparel company making bespoke polo shirts, quarter zips, and hoodies for those selected clubs looking to take their branded game to a whole new level. If you want to check out their apparel, and again, it's going to knock your socks off, send an email to info@kickpointgolf.com. They'll get right back to you. There's no middleman. They're going to go right to the guys that do this work. You're going to check it out, and you are really going to love what they do. I'm going to start showing the polo shirts that they designed for me on my Instagram, @CTMascaro. Check them out there so you can get a sample of what they look like. These guys know where it's at. Now let's talk about golf getaways and buddy's trip locations. When you're thinking about that, think about our friends over at the Macklemore, which is a wonderful resort located just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, high atop Lookout Mountain. It is a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the U.S. by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, The Keep, is under construction and will open summer of 2024. The Keep is a Bill Bergen, Reese Jones design and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, with every inch of that edge filled up with a golf hole. A world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You got to see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to macklemore.com to book your stay and play package. Now let's talk about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade. From the very beginning, P790 irons have been rooted in clean aesthetics and thoughtful design. However, their true beauty is found beneath the surface. With AI-optimized weighting and speed foam air on the inside, every iron is uniquely designed to perform exactly how you need it to. As striking as they are on the outside, their true beauty lies within. Learn more about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade by checking out their website at TaylorMadeGolf.com. All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is 1978 PGA champion and 1986 Players champion, John Mahaffey. I've really treasured getting to know John over the last few years. He was a great player both as an amateur and as a professional, played his college golf at the University of Houston. There he was named a first-team All-American in 1969 and 70. John would win the individual title at the 1970 National Championship and help the Cougars win back-to-back national championships in 69 and 70. He earned his degree in psychology, was inducted into their Athletics Hall of Fame in 1976. John turned pro in 1971, and he won 10 times out on the PGA Tour. Again, that 1978 PGA Championship being right outside of my hometown of Pittsburgh at Oakmont. There he came from seven strokes back with 14 holes to play to win in a playoff. He also won that 86 Players Championship. There he beat Larry Mize by a stroke. He won once out on the Champions Tour. He was a member of the victorious 1979 Ryder Cup team. In 1983, he was inducted into the Texas Golf Hall of Fame. He has gone on to write several wonderful books, including Hogan's Boy, A Journey in Golf, plus golf-related mystery novel series around Terry McCall, a fictitious golf superstar who was on the rise and then gets in all kinds of hair-raising situations. Those books are titled so far, Shafted, Unfinished Business, and Dead Quiet. More installments are on the way that I can't wait for. You can go find all of those books out on John's website, johnmahaffeyauthor.com, or out on Amazon. And I couldn't be more excited to get to have him back with me again tonight here on Next on the Tee. Hey, John, how are you, my friend?
Chris, I'm great. Boy, I tell you, aren't you tired after saying all that stuff so fast? That's amazing. I love it. Yeah. Great to be with you again.
It is always great having you as part of the show, John. And here we are. We're on the heels of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, a dominant final round performance from Scottie Scheffler. I don't think he's getting nearly enough credit for how great he has been over the last several years. Sort of feels a little Tiger-esque. I want to get your thoughts on what you saw from him and what you saw at Bay Hill over the weekend.
Well, I just think that his game is rounded out. And he's in a great position to defend his title this week. So he couldn't be in a better position, coming in with a lot of confidence and on a golf course he knows very well and has won on.
And John, speaking of Mr. Palmer, I know you got to play a lot with him during the 1970s, the early part of your career, the latter stages of his time on the regular tour. Want to get some memories of the time you got to spend with the King?
All right. Oh, this is good. The first time I ever had a chance to play with Arnold was down in Jacksonville, Jacksonville Country Club, before the TPC or Sawgrass or any of them were actually around, or that we played there. And I played with him the final round of the Jacksonville Open. And I walked up on the first tee shaking in my boots, playing with the King, and, you know, just wall-to-wall people, big dog leg left around the lake and stuff. So I just sitting there talking to him a little bit. And after I shook his hand, I looked down at his driver. And he always had his name on top of his driver. Now, Arnold loved to work on his own golf clubs. He re-gripped all his clubs with leather, all that kind of stuff. And he loved to get on the grinder. So I looked at the top of his driver, and it had NLD Palmer. He had ground off all the way ARN. I mean, it was amazing. He played very well that day. And I don't think he ever missed a fairway. But we got to be very, very good friends. When I ran into a few, a few hard times on the tour and stuff, and Arnold was always there, put a hand around your shoulder and talk to you a little, or on your, you know, around your shoulders and talk to you about stuff. And, he actually straightened me out, later on in my career and got me going in the right path. And he would always say, you know, how are we doing? Every time I saw him at Augusta, how are we doing? Are you still okay? You know, and he cared about people so much, and it was genuine. It was no fake in Arnold. It was all real.
So when you say he straightened you out later on in your career, was that a golf swing situation? Was that a mental thing? What were you working on with him that he was able to get you going again?
How about lifestyle? it had a lot to do with, I had a big problem drinking. Okay. And I let it get the best of me for a long time. In fact, about several months after I won the Players Championship in 86, this started. And for some reason, I thought that people in golf owed me something, and they didn't. You know, I should have sat back and thought about how lucky I was to play with the people that I played with and to establish a record and to have won a PGA Championship and a Players. But I got a little too cocky, and I got carried away, and I got hung up in the world of alcohol, and it lasted till about the year 2000, and so that's 14 years of stuff. And Arnold, and during that period of time, Arnold, when I was on the senior tour, he came up to me and he said, "Look, people know what's going on with you, and this is not good. You're a better person than this." And he straightened me out. He really did. And May 16th, 2000, I stopped drinking and haven't had a drink since. So. I owe a lot of that to Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus as well. I really do. Those guys, they cared about you. If they thought you had talent and you know, you could help the cause of the tour and stuff, they were on your side.
John, it's interesting that you talk about all of that, because I was reading your bio that they had for you in the 1983 tour media guide. And one paragraph stated, "When John Mahaffey's game is right, there are a few who can strike the golf ball with the same authority. His only problem over the years have been physical. He's had more than his fair share of injuries, mostly the result of strange occurrences, like trying to blast out of a bunker at Pebble Beach in the Bing Crosby National Pro-Am. His club head tore into the heavy sod on the lip and then came to a sudden halt. The result of all of that were tendons on the back of his hand and his wrist gave way, although you'll never hear him complain." Does that sound right?
Well, I didn't think that anybody really listened or cared. In fact, most of the guys out there didn't really want you there. If they felt like that you could beat them, they didn't want you out there. So, you know, if you got injured, hey, good deal. Nice going. Good luck. You know, that kind of stuff. But no, a lot of stuff was self-inflicted on my part. I was just messed up. I really was for quite a while. I owe a lot to my wife, Elizabeth, and and to a lot of my true friends, Hubert Green being one of them, really stuck by me in some pretty hard times. So, Fuzzy Zeller, another, two of my old drinking buddies, by the way, that were tickled to death that I'd stop. So, it's a great fraternity. The PGA Tour, it always has been. And I hope it stays that way. In today's world, I'm not so sure, but we had a great time, all of us together, and the traveling circus, the carnival that came to town every year, and people look forward to seeing us, and we look forward to being to these places and showing off our skills.
John, that media guide goes on to quote you as saying, "With my type of game, I have to practice a lot. It's all due to timing." What do you remember that? What do you mean by that?
Well, I used to have to. Well, I love to practice anyway. My whole idea when I got on the tour, Ben Hogan was my mentor. All right, when I first got on the tour, which was awesome. But I also learned how to play out of Ben Hogan's book, and I played a lot of golf with Lee Trevino early on. And I saw these guys and how they could work the ball around the golf course and stuff. I thought to myself, I want to learn how to do that. I don't want to be one dimensional. I don't want any particular shot to scare me. I want to be able to get up there with confidence and be able to hit a draw if I need to, or fade, or hit it low, or hit it high. And I worked a lot on doing that. Sadly, I wish I'd have worked a little bit more on the putting. I wasn't a bad putter, but I was a little too streaky. I think I would have won a lot more tournaments.
Interesting you mentioned Lee Trevino, because he always struck me as a guy who not only did he like to talk a lot out on the golf course, but he liked to share knowledge. He liked to share how to hit a shot, how to shape a shot, that sort of thing. Did Trevino spend time with you? Did you learn from him about how to hit different types of shots?
Actually, I did. When I was a senior, before the NCAAs, I'd qualified for the U.S. Open at Hazeltine. In 1970, and I played with Lee Trevino in the last round. And Lee Trevino, he never knew anybody's name. Hey, buddy, how you doing? Hey, pro, whatever. So I learned a lot, kind of just watching through osmosis through the round and how he played different kinds of shots. So we're walking down the final hole, and he says, I'm checking that leaderboard. He says, if you can par this hole, he says, you'll tie Ben Crenshaw for low amateur in the U.S. Open. I don't know if that was meant as a needle to see how I'd take it or what, but I did make par at the final hole, and I tied Lee Trevino. Ben Crenshaw for low amateur. And when I walked out of the scoring tent, Trevino was sitting there waiting on me, and he says, Hey, buddy, he says, Texas boy, I like the way you play. He says, you got a lot of guts. You can get it up and down out of a garbage can, but let me tell you something. That little duck hook you got going is never going to work on the tour. If you're thinking about playing on the tour, let me show you something. So he took me over to the practice tee. Now this is after the Open, and he got a guy to give us some golf balls and to hit, and he showed me how to hit a fade. Well, the very next week I go to the NCAA and at Ohio State, I beat Lanny Watkins by a shot, and yes, I can fade it. And I played all kinds of different shots. It was a different world for me. And that kind of, again, watching Hogan play all these shots, watch Trevino, learning from these guys. Trevino, when I lost a tournament of champions to Johnny Miller 1 year, I hit a really good shot into the final hole, and it just happened to kick a little left and rolled up against the collar of the green. And I didn't know about the bladed wedge or the three wood or whatever at the time to top it out of there. I tried to putt it, left it short, missed, and Johnny Miller won. Well, here's Lee Trevino, three golf balls when I walk out of the scoring tent, takes me out of the putting green, says, let me show you something. And he showed me how to blade a wedge. So, he really did share, and he wasn't afraid to do stuff. I mean, he learned the hard way. He dug it out of the dirt, just like Hogan did. And he knew what he was doing, and he could make the ball talk. I'm telling you what, he was great. Both those guys, it was amazing.
So why was it his opinion? And clearly, I guess he was right, that a hook isn't going to help you win on the PGA Tour. You need to hit a fade. Why is that accurate?
Well, because I wasn't strong enough to hit a high hook, okay? So if I was going to play good at any major championship, basically, without having to get it up and down out of everywhere, is I was going to have to hit the ball into the greens higher into the greens, because the greens were always very firm. And a fade seems to land a lot softer. So that's why he said, you know, if you're going to play the tour, you need to know how to fade the golf ball. And if you're going to play in major championships and have a chance to win, you have to get the ball higher. And that's kind of what he taught me.
John, switching gears a little bit, it's Players' Championship Week. I want to go back to the very first Players' Championship. It was held in 1974 right here in Atlanta at the Atlanta Country Club. Back then, it was held late in the season in August. You were in that field. Jack Nicklaus would win it that week, obviously the first of his three Players' Championships. But what do you remember about that first go-round at the Players?
I remember that, Joe, when, before you said it, I remember Jack Nicklaus won the golf tournament. But most of my memories kind of go back to the Players' Championship when we played over at Sawgrass, then moved over to the TPC. I remember playing when Lanny won, when I made a hole-in-one over at Sawgrass in the last round on, what, 15, I think it is? To get maybe in the top 10. Other than that, and then when we went over to the TPC, it was Pete Dye golf course. And I was just looking over my, you know, the tournaments that I won and where I won. And I looked down and I thought, you know, Pete Dye designed the TPC at Sawgrass. He designed Southwind and he designed Kingsmill. I won 10 times. 30% of my wins were on Pete Dye golf courses. So obviously I liked them. And, you know, even though I might have bitched about them, I like them because they fit my game. More accurate, not, you know, you didn't have to blast at 9 miles. And, you know, you had to think your way around the golf courses.
So when the Players moved over to TPC Sawgrass, you're right. I mean, Pete Dye, diabolical, right? That's what they call a lot of his golf courses. When that first time you guys go over there, what was your first impression when you saw that layout and everything that you were going to have to deal with now for, you know, forever, for as long as you were going to play and the Players out on the regular tour?
Well, I thought it was great for a lot of different reasons. In the early 80s, what was that, 83?
Was that, 80, was that the 82 first? Was the first one.
82, okay. Well, in the early 80s, I was on consecutive policy boards for the tour. And that's when they came up with the TPC concept, you know, the stadium golf concept and the TPC network. And I was very happy to be on that thing and then to be able to play, because Beamon did so many miraculous things. I think by far he's the best commissioner we've ever had, because I mean, he was forward thinking, proactive, innovative. He was communicative. Like he could communicate with the public. He was a player and he was not afraid of innovation. So when he got together with Pete Dye and built these golf courses for other reasons too, because we were paying a lot of money to rent golf courses to play our tournaments on. If we could play on our own venues, we could save a lot of money, put some of that money back in the purse and then start a reserve so that we could start what happened when I happened to be on the policy board as well, was the deferred compensation retirement plan that we have, which is second to none. I think in any sport. So, I mean, I was pleased to be on that, but I was really pleased to be able to play, on our flagship golf course that we had for the TPC network.
So do you know, like, when did the idea that the Players were going to host their own tournament, when did that come about?
That was Dean. He had that, who knows how long he'd had that on his mind. I mean, he was such a forward thinker. It was amazing. The people he had on the policy board, as independent directors were phenomenal. I sat next to a guy named Bob Kirby, who was from Westinghouse. And I didn't know anything about business. And Bob Kirby, I'd look at Bob Kirby when something would come up and he'd shake his head no, and I'd go, okay. When the TPCs came up, boy, his head was just going, yeah, this is what we need. You know, this is what'll get us going. And the stadium golf concept was wonderful. How many more people you could seat around a green and everybody could see. I mean, the guy was just phenomenal.
John, wind was always an issue, or could possibly always be an issue any day going out there to play on that golf course. It's not that far from the ocean, just down the road. Talk about dealing with the wind and how nervous, if at all, you guys were. If you got up in the morning, got to the practice tee, and all of a sudden the wind is starting to howl because you know down the road you're going to have to deal with 17.
Well, I think what I tried to do is not think about 17 until I got there, because there's a lot of other holes that could, that were dangerous as well. 17 is it kind of reminds me a little bit of the 12th at Augusta, okay, because of the swirling winds, all the big trees back behind it and everything else at Sawgrass, at TPC. You never know. So when you're kind of, when you're standing up there, and I don't care. I mean, I think I hit 7 iron the last round. The wind was really blowing, and kind of knocked it down and tried to keep it over on the left side. I didn't want to mess with the right side. I mean, I was tied with Larry Mize at the time. But when you hit the tee shot, and even if you hit it solid, and even if you hit it just like you wanted to, you're really not sure. It could land on a slope on that green or something, scoot over the green. You can, it could be the shortest par five you've ever played in your life.
Indeed. So, all right. So let's switch to the 12th at Augusta, because when you're on 17, you know, at TPC Sawgrass, you can tell where the wind's coming from. It's a pretty open space.
Yeah, you think you can. You look over at 16, you know, it may be blowing a little bit, then it'll stop. But then you look at the flag, it's almost, it's similar. It's not exactly like Augusta, but then the flag may be blowing a different direction over here at 17. So, I mean, it gets your attention.
So how do you determine when you go to the 12th at Augusta and you're standing on that tee and you're trying to figure out, I'm guessing you're looking up at the pine trees, trying to figure out where the tops of them are blowing, but you're right. It swirls over there. It never ceases to amaze me, John, particularly in the fourth round, because it's always a sucker pin on the right-hand side of 12. And right, guys shoot for that pin and invariably come up short and the ball rolls back into Ray's Creek. The play is always over the bunker, but guys continue to want to take on that pin. I've never understood why.
Got to have discipline. Hogan told me this. Hogan told me the same thing. He says, never take a shot at that right hole location because it's deceptive. Ray's Creek in front doesn't go straight across. It actually angles a little bit back toward the 13th tee. So there's more room to, you have to carry further over on that right side. And it's just, it doesn't make any sense. You're right to take a shot. And then what happens if you miss it right? You know, you're in a lot of trouble there too, or over.
Right.
You know, it's the middle of the green, the final round is a smart shot.
But how do you decide on the wind, getting back to that? How are you taking a look at trying to figure out which direction that wind was coming from?
I think you kind of guess a little bit because you look over at the 11th green, all right? And again, it's just like at TPC. The flag could be blowing one way there and the other way on 12. You know, it's crazy. So you just have to, hope, kind of guess a little bit and maybe hit between gusts because it gusts through those draws right around there. It's incredible that Amen Corner is rightly named.
Trying to putt those greens at Augusta National has got to be one of the most challenging things to do in the game. How'd you learn how to figure out where you needed to hit the ball so you gave yourself an opportunity for birdie or better?
Well, I tried to keep it underneath the hole a lot of times. That's kind of what Hogan told me before I got there. But I think you have to play there a lot because actually, like you get to the 14th hole, your miss there is never short. It's always long because it's easier to get it up and down from over that green rather than trying to pitch up over some kind of mound that's like a tidal wave coming at you. I never did learn how to putt those greens that well. I really did. I had a chance to win, 1981, I think it was, when Tom Watson won.
Yeah, 81.
And I finished tied for eighth, I think. But the last three holes, I guarantee I never hit the ball more solid in my life. I took it right at the flag at 16, and I guess it's adrenaline that I just didn't realize. Thought I had enough experience to deal with it, but hit it over the green there, hit it over the green at 17, hit it over the green at 18, hit all three of them at the flag and made three bogeys.
wow.
Yeah, I mean, that golf course and the wind, and you just have to know the golf course, I think. And having good experiences early on, I think, helps a lot, too.
Do you remember the first time you drove up Magnolia Lane?
I did. I do. And it was, just like everybody else, you're just in awe and you're thinking, and you're looking over at the practice tee, which was much smaller then. And you're thinking, well, you know, Sam Snead was there and Hogan was there, you know, and Byron Nelson and Jimmy DeMeritt, Jackie Burke won here. And, you know, it's just all the tradition and everything. And just, you kind of get goosebumps. I still do when I think about it. And then when you get on that first tee and you, you know, it's okay early in the week, but when you get there for the first day, I'm going to tell you what, it's scary as hell.
Yeah. I always wonder what it's like to put a peg in the ground for the very first time in an actual tournament round.
Yeah. I mean, you just, you've got a game plan, obviously. And I was never long enough to carry that bunker on the right, even when the tee was further up. So that was a very difficult driving hole for me. I just try to cut it down the fairway, you know, cut it off the left edge of the fairway and try to put it in the middle of the fairway. But that green was always hard. It's kind of setting up, and I never played the first hole that well. I know I never birdied it. Let's put it that way. I enjoyed playing Augusta. I just never did fare as well as I would have liked to there, obviously.
One of the things I talk to a lot of your peers about, and even to my buddies, because I've been fortunate to be out at Augusta National and walk that golf course many times, never played it, but I got to walk it a bunch of times as a patron. It's just the TV doesn't do it justice for what the topography is and the elevation changes. Were you surprised the first time you went out there to check out that golf course, what it was actually like?
Absolutely. I mean, the 10th hole looks like a ski slope. All right. You know, and it's a blind tee shot. You need to hit a draw, but not too much, because they say there's a Delta counter over there for your airplane to get out of town if you hit it over there. So, I mean, we got all these things. But, you know, I will tell you, my rookie year when I played there, Cliff Roberts, all right? He was running the tournament. And so they assigned you caddies back then. So I had a caddy the first day, and I didn't particularly care for him. We didn't get along, so I got a caddy for the second day, and we didn't get along that well. And the third day, I got another caddy, and I get a message on my locker, Mr. Roberts would like to see you in his office. And so I walk in there, and he said, Mr. Mahaffey, I understand that you don't like some of the caddies we have. He said, I'm very sorry for that, but we're running out of caddies, so I suggest that this last one you keep him, because we don't have enough caddies to keep you in the tournament. So,
wow.
Yeah, he was. That was, I think when they changed that rule to where you could use your own caddy, I think that was great. Although Ben Crenshaw, you know, his caddy was phenomenal for him there. The caddies that really knew the greens there could help you tremendously, because there's a lot of optical illusions there.
John, just a couple more before I let you go, and I want to get an update on your book series, the Nemesis series. I know you've got three of those that have come out already. The last couple of times we've spoken, I know that there are a couple more that are in the works. Give us an update. What's going on there?
Well, Dead Quiet is out. Yeah, that's the third one. And Blindsided, I'm still, it's third edit. I can't get my editors happy about some of the stuff that I'm doing, but that's okay. That's all right. It's just going to take a little longer to get out, and that's okay. That's fine. I was writing these things at rapid speed, and I get that. I need to kind of settle down and do a few things around the house and stuff too. And I'm waiting for that one to come back to me so I can check it out, and then maybe, and we'll send it to have it laid out and see when that comes out. But I have no idea when that's going to come out. And then the really, really, really good one is called Burning In. That's the fifth one. And I'm about, I'd say three quarters done with that one. That's the one I want to end. Well, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to give anything away. But I'm going to take a different direction after that a little bit, I think. It'll still be a Nemesis series, but I think people will like it. And so the books seem to be, people are starting to take a liking to them. So, you know, if you're bored and you need something to read and you like a little bit about a golf and you like a lot about karma, pick up the Nemesis series. They're great.
There you go. 100%. So, John, remind our listeners how they can go out there and get a copy of all your books, whether it's on your site or on Amazon.
Actually, it's very quick to go on Amazon. Just put my name in, John Mahaffey, author, and it'll take you right to it. And we got it on Kindle. And I also have, I've got two of the books in audio, the first two books, Unfinished Business, Shafted Unfinished Business. And we're working on Dead Quiet. So we'll have Audible for all of them, too.
How can our listeners also follow you on social media?
Don't? No, they can. I'm kidding. I don't, you know, it's really funny. As busy as I've been with all this kind of stuff, I don't really do it a lot on social media anymore. I'm sorry. I'm being honest. I look at it and I love it. I just don't. I'm too busy. It's hard to write books and rewrite and do all that other stuff too.
Yeah, I understand.
Scare you with that one?
Well, you know, I follow you at Hogan's Boy is where you're at. I mean, I've been following you for a long time. And, you know, when you're out there, you put out a lot of really good stuff. So, but well, I understand okay. You got a lot going on. So
well, I do.
Understandable.
I'm going to start getting back to it. I really am. I didn't mean to scare everybody off. Please don't. please don't get scared. It's okay. I'll be all right.
I'm sure you
the
will.
The medication's kicking in.
That's beautiful. John, you're the best, my friend. I always have such a wonderful time when you come and you're a part of this show. I hope we get this privilege again very soon.
I do too, Chris. You're marvelous, and your homework is great. You haven't missed a beat, and I love that. And congratulations on all the accolades you've got. You deserve them. You worked awful hard to get there.
Well, I appreciate that very much, my friend. John, take care. All the best to you and your family. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
See you, John. That is the great John Mahaffey, and he's just such a wonderful individual. I mean, he was a heck of a player. I mean, you don't win a major and a players if you're not a heck of a player, and obviously a great amateur player, great in college, and then obviously great on the PGA Tour and afterwards, and all of that. You stack on top of that, what a great broadcaster he was, what a great analyst he was. I sure wish he was still out there doing that as well, but he's turned that into becoming a wonderful author, and these books are fantastic, just like John is. He, like I said at the beginning, and I meant it sincerely, he has meant a whole lot to me over the last several years, become a wonderful friend, and like I say, every time he's a part of the show, that segment is just absolutely outstanding. I can't thank him enough for being this. Tonight was the seventh time he's been a part of the show, and I'm already looking forward to number 8. I hope that's very, very soon. Joining me next is going to be one of the best ball and club fitters in the history of our game, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that, and a heck of a great guy, and that is Michael Gibson. Before I get to Michael, I was talking with Eddie Dry, VP of Domestic Sales for Strixon Cleveland Golf, at the PGA Merchandise Show earlier this year, and I said, Eddie, I like your CBX full-face wedges. How can they help an average player like me play better? Here's what he had to say.
An average player, I use one, and I'm in some lies that you can't even believe. And I need all the help I can get. And the face is bigger, and the grooves go all the way up and all the way out to the toe. So if you hit it on the toe, you miss it, bam, there's a groove. So I like that. So I carry a 58.
There you have it, folks. Try the new CBX full-face wedges from Cleveland Golf. I also want to give a shout-out to my friends over at On Point Golf and their great On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. Now let's talk grips. I want to tell you about Lambkin grips. Every shot, as you know, has its own unique feel. The trick? Feel comfortable with each one. And comfort is built into the very DNA of Sonar Plus Black Grips. Composed of their Genesis material that provides supreme comfort and durability, with their fingerprint technology, creates a strong connection and unforgettable touch. The game changes from shot to shot. The feel on your hand shouldn't. Lambkin. Feel is everything. All right, now making his next On the Tee debut with me is Michael Gibson. Michael is the manager of Preferred Player Promotions for Titleist Golf. Prior to his current role, Michael was the manager of Golf Ball Fitting, and going back to 2000, he was a teaching professional at Harmon Golf. I had the pleasure of being introduced to Michael by Tom Patry during the demo day at the PGA Merchandise Show, and he was gracious enough to give me his card and said he'd love to come on the show, and I couldn't be more excited that time is here tonight on Next on the Tee. Hey, Michael, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. And, you know, following John, that's tough. I mean, I'd rather sit here. Once you get John back on, listen to some of those stories he's got.
He's fantastic. But I know you're great because I got to spend a little bit of time with you chatting at demo day. But give me an update. Talk to me about what Manager of Preferred Player Promotions is for Titleist.
Well, I wear a lot of hats, but my main hat is that I manage the budget for about 3,400 Titleist staffers. I take care of their equipment. So all their driver, fairway, irons, wedges, putters, golf bags, that type of thing.
So I want to get into all of that because one of the things, Michael, we talk an awful lot about on this show is how important it is to get fit. I can't tell you how many times my buddies or people that I talk to have the wrong conception about getting fit. They think that's for tour players like the people that you're working with. Oh, it's just for them. That's not for us. And really the opposite of that is true in my mind, because a tour player can make adjustments to equipment and still go out and play well. If we're playing with the wrong fitted equipment, improperly fitted equipment, I guess I should say, our game is a disaster. I mean, we're probably costing ourselves lots of strokes. For the weekend warrior like me, talk about why going out and getting properly fit is the thing we absolutely should be doing.
Well, a good fitter can unlock some performance attributes that just about every golf club offers you. So we try to focus on the three D's. You know, the first one is making sure that a golfer can maximize his distance. I'm not talking about hitting it as far as he can, but just giving a person a baseline so they kind of know how far the 7-iron goes and how far the 6-iron goes, and gives them a satisfactory distance requirement. The second one is you want a golf club that gives you a narrow dispersion. You know, sometimes we do tend to step on some shots every once in a while and we spray it left or right, and that doesn't do you any good when you're, especially when you're hitting an 8-iron or a 9-iron or whatever you have in your hands into a tight pin. And the third one is probably the most misunderstood from folks that have never been fit. And I think it has probably one of the most important values on the fitting, and that's the descending angle into a green, where, you know, I grew up in a world where I liked to hit a low running hook, but that didn't help me if I had to hit over a bunker or if I'm hitting a shot to a tight pin. So you want to get the three Ds. And usually it just takes someone that can unlock those three Ds in the form of a typical fitting.
Michael, one of the places most of us, again, weekend warriors, where we lose our loose strokes so often is from about 40 yards in, pitching, chipping, putting. How do we go about, I mean, look, we all want to hit it farther, and everyone talks about club head speed and how far we can drive the ball, and I know chicks dig the long ball, but how do we get over ourselves, get over our egos, and really start to focus on the place that we lose a lot of strokes in and around the green?
Well, you need the right golf ball to begin with. It's the only piece of equipment you use on every shot. This is not a commercial by any chance, because there's a lot of good golf balls out there. But if you have a golf ball that is not giving you the check or the spin that you need to give you, get it close to the hole, then that's a disadvantage. And the other part of it's being able to use your wedges correctly, because, you know, we tend to gravitate towards a wedge that we kind of grew up using, and it may not have the correct bouncing rind. So a lot of players have a difficult time trying to figure out how to not get the leading edge stuck into the ground every time they're hitting this delicate chip shot over a bunker. So getting fit from the green backwards is kind of where we start the process with ball and with using the correct wedges.
So you mentioned bounce and grind. Those are a lot of things that we don't typically understand. How to figure out what's the right bounce that I need on my wedges, and what is grind, and how do I know which grind I need? Help us with that.
Well, look, I'll give you a great example. A full grind is something that you'd use. Like most irons have a full grind on it, where there's not a lot of heel or toe relief. And it's used for a fuller golf shot because you're moving, your body's moving laterally, and you're able to put a little bit of club head speed on it. So even if you did drive the leading edge into the ground, there's enough club head speed to kind of dictate the type of divot and throw the ball like you need it to. So, but if you start to work back into a club that actually has more loft where you're looking for relief, then we've got different grinds. So you have some wedges that have some toe relief and some wedges that have heel relief. So you can lay the club open. So if the bounce of the club is not necessarily anywhere near the leading edge, it's usually if you turn the club upside down, it's kind of on the back trail of the golf club. So that's the part of the golf club that's the working side of the golf club. It's not the leading edge typically. So if you have the right bounce and grind, going through a process of going through selection with a club professional or a fitter, they'll help you pick a grind that we do blind fitting at Right Work. And so we don't basically tell you what you're hitting, and we just let the shot uncover itself. And it's funny how players, most of the times they're in a wedge that they never thought they would be in. And most of it's through trial. And then we base a lot of that on success rate. It's not really hard once you see what the golf ball does when it hits a green, whether it's checking or it's coming off the blade and it's rolling out, how performance of grind and bounce really helps a player out.
Michael, talk about how the different types of turf lead us to needing a different kind of bounce, because I'm imagining if we live in an area like maybe in the Pacific Northwest where it rains a lot versus a place like Arizona where it doesn't, the bounce that we need on our wedge is going to be vastly different for those different types of turf.
Well, first off, I'll start off by saying that we kind of like to mix grinds and bounces into our set of wedges. So you don't always stuck on, if let's say you are playing in conditions where the grass is deep and wet and you would want a high bounced wedge because it helps the club come out of its divot, then you may also have a shot where you're in tight Bermuda and you might want a low bounce golf club to help you pick it cleanly off that turf. So there's the old saying we used to use as a driver digger or a sweeper picker type player. They would use typically different bounces. So we would figure out what the primary wedge is. We kind of work from the green backwards, and we kind of pick shots. Everybody has their feared shot. We usually start there and kind of get that out of the way. That's usually a flop shot over a bunker from a tight lie. We start there, get that club out of the way, then we work our way back. Usually, it's two different bouncing grinds. But a lot of it's trial and error, and conditions do play a big part in the club you choose for your primary wedge.
Michael, you mentioned golf ball a few moments ago, and most of us have the thought that, well, you know, I need to go buy the most expensive ball because it must be better if it's more expensive. Or we're looking at what our favorite golfer is out there playing, Jordan Spieth or someone along those lines. Well, you know, if it's good for Jordan, it must be good for me. Talk about how we should go through an objective process to decide which is the right golf ball for our game.
Well, you know, we used to go and I would walk up to someone on the range and I would say, hey, I'm Mike Gibson with Titleist. Could you do me a favor? Could you pull three golf balls out of your bag for me? and I just want to do a little golf ball check. And they would reach in there, and if they're fiddling around trying to say, well, I better find three, you know, golf balls. I don't want to make this guy upset. Or they're just reaching there and grab three golf balls, and they're all different. And one of them happens to have a stripe on it. That person needs a little bit more education as to the type of golf ball they need to stick with on every golf shot. So we usually grab a couple different golf balls, and you could hit shots from different positions around a green and find out which one is giving you the best performance. That's the best way, through trial and error, working your way backwards. We typically don't validate golf ball from a driver perspective. It's easier to fit a driver to the golf ball by lofting up or lofting down. But when you're hitting a scoring shot into a green, there's nothing more important than having the right golf ball that gives you the performance you're looking for. That's drop and stop versus hit, bounce, bounce, and release off the bat.
So, Michael, when we're out there evaluating, I know you talk about going from the green back, but when we're comparing golf balls, I sort of envision doing something like a tour player has with a notepad in my back pocket, tracking the performance of each ball. Distance may be one thing, but I'm guessing I'm looking more at proximity to the hole, maybe greens and regulation. Are there some things that I should be, if I have an opportunity to play multiple golf balls or go out to a practice area and hit shots from multiple distances, what are the things that I should be tracking to make sure I'm making a good decision for the right golf ball for me?
Well, you teed it up for me, because it's all about where the proximity to the hole. You know, if you want to be a great putter, it's better to hit the ball close to the hole, you know?
Right.
I always look at it as I get fit. When I get fit into a golf ball, I get fit into a particular golf ball that gives me the most spin around the greens. There are days when I'm playing a golf course, it's rather firm, and you know, and I'm trying to hit it as hard as I can to get it as close to the, make my next shot shorter, obviously. Then I may pick a golf ball that has a little bit less spin, but firmer golf ball that's going to kind of ricochet a little bit more down the fairway. That might be something I would use then, but typically I would stick with a golf ball that I was fit with, which is a golf ball in my case. I need all the spin I can get. And so I choose the highest spinning golf ball that I can get my hands on.
And you mentioned this sort of a moment ago, but I want to clarify. So for the golfer who has two or three of these types of golf balls and three or four of those types of golf balls, and then maybe finds a Pro V1 out in the bushes, and we've got all kinds of mix and match golf balls in our golf bag, and then we play different ones throughout the round because maybe we lose this one or maybe we lost that one, so I'm going to grab another one, throw it down it, and continue to play. Why is carrying multiple types of golf balls really the wrong thing for us to do?
Well, because I hear this often. You know, I play with somebody and I'll toss them a sleeve because I work for a golf ball company. It's easy. And I'll say, yeah, try this golf ball. Not to get them out. I just want them to see that there's something else out there for them. And they go, wow, I'm going to save these for, you know, like the special round. I go, then why would you be hitting an inferior golf ball? Hey, golf is hard enough. And so we want to give ourselves every opportunity to play well. So I'm going to, from fitness, from nutrition, from club fitting, from taking a lesson, from having the right golf ball, to being the right shoes, to wearing comfortable golf clothes, all those things are so important because golf is hard. And we need to start whittling away at the things that don't make me a better golfer. And so since the golf ball is the only piece of equipment that used on every golf shot, I start there. And then I work with the wedges. Then I make sure my putter's the right length and the right loft and gives me everything I need to, you know, increase my chances of making putts. And then I work my way all the way up to my driver. And that's where I start adjusting my clubs to the golf ball that I've already picked prior to getting that far up the bag.
And Michael, as you talk about length and loft, when we go into a big box store like my friends over at the PGA Tour Superstore and we start looking at irons, and boy, I really like this set of irons. And it's fun and exciting to think that I'm going to buy those irons and I'm just going to go right to the golf course and I'm going to have this new set of irons that I'm going to play. And as we talked about earlier, making sure you get properly fit. But talk about lie angle and how many strokes we're giving up by just buying off the rack and not getting them bent to the right way for us.
Well, the good news is you can buy them off the rack if you needed to. It's not a, it's not a common practice anymore, but there are some places that do sell them off the rack, and I give them a lot of credit because some folks are impulse buyers. They're maybe they don't want to get fit for other reasons. They're not comfortable stepping in that bay at PGATS or Golf Galaxy or going to see the local golf professional. It makes them a little nervous to do that. So if you did find yourself one of those individuals, then you can bend your lie angles. There's many places to bend them adequately enough. We don't look theoretically as a divot pattern, toe down or toe up or whatever, as the only deciding factor when it comes to lie angle. We bend lie angle and fit lie angle to shot shape more than we do anything else. So if I have a player that is a little toe down into a divot, but they hit the perfectly straight shot and I release that toe out of the ground by bending the golf club up, then they start to hook it, well, I wasn't serving them well that day. I need to make sure that the golf club they're hitting, whatever the lie angle happens to be, whatever the loft happens to be, gives them their number and gives them their shot shape they're looking for. You know, I'll ask tour players often if they know what the loft and lie of their 7-iron is, and majority of the time they don't know. But you ask them what shot shape they like and how far they want the ball to carry, they know that number because that's the value they put on a shot. So the club fitter or the club professional, their responsibility is to make sure your golf clubs are set up in a way that gives you the number you're looking for and the shot shape you're looking for, hitting targets on a quadrant, kind of trying to keep the shots inside of the bunkers, and hopefully that is going to result in you playing better.
Michael, just a couple more before I let you go. And I know you just mentioned that you work with a lot of tour players. I'm sure you've worked with hundreds of them over the course of your career, maybe without naming names, but what are some of your favorite stories from interacting with the tour players that you love to share with your buddies or your peers?
Well, a lot of the players that come to where I work at the Talus Performance Institute, I deal with on the club professional circuit now. So I deal with 3,400 club pros, and I deal with, of those, 40 of them, what I would call my elite players. And there are those are your better players in the section to play in national championships and stuff. But I have played with some tour players of old, and one really cool fitting I did years ago was with Aaron Baddeley, which I botched the fitting up because he is a low ball hitter. And at the time I was trying to get him some trajectory, try to get the ball up higher, because I understand what hitting the ball higher and further looks like. And it's usually coming from, let's say I was trying to get a peak height of 100 feet, so to speak. And he likes to hit his driver at like 85 feet. I'm just using those numbers because I don't recall basically what they were. And then I fit him into a driver that would give him really beautiful high trajectory. And he looked at me and goes, give me one with 1 degree less. So a lot of times we win the battle and lose the war because they have a playing style and a launch condition style that may not always be what's quoted in our theory. And so oftentimes we have to negotiate or compromise based upon what they feel like they need. Now, I've been on the tee with hundreds of tour players when they're getting fit, and they're all just unbelievable. Listening to John talk earlier, he doesn't give himself a lot of credit, but they're such great ball strikers. And there's nothing more fun than to be right next to someone that can have that explosive impact and produce a ball flight that's like so cherished in golf. So I think my favorite people to fit are people that are unaware that they're actually going to get something out of it really extraordinary. And they could be anything from a 12 handicap or even helping my wife or friends try to get better at golf. So the stories are endless. A lot of that ball shaping and ball flight and carry distance, they all make us smile. And the goal of making people better golfers is realistic, and they just have to be patient and trust what's going on, and then starting from the green backwards and making sure it's all something they can deal with after they leave.
As I was doing my research on you, I read several great reviews of how great a club fitter you are, and we've heard a lot about that through the course of this conversation, and just how wonderful the experience was for the people that you are working with. It's clear that you have a passion for helping people play better. That isn't something that everyone has. You're not there punching a clock to get people through the process and on to the next person. Where does your passion for that come from?
You know, it's easy to be passionate about something. You know, when you look in someone's eyes and you see that they really get it, they understand what you're saying to them, you try to keep it simple. And then at the end of the day, when I go home and I take my shoes off and I eventually go to bed and I lay my head on the pillow, I ask myself if I did everything I can today to help people. And that's kind of what I've been doing. I've had that same thing happen to me in my life. You know, I lost my arm in a boating accident when I was 17, and I was told I couldn't do it. And once I heard that, I said, well, that's fodder for me. So when I realized that I live in a one-arm world where most people have spares, and that philosophy has kind of served me well, and there's not one person that I've ever run into that says, well, you can't help me today, so what are you doing? So I just look at it as the passion comes from the heart and from the love of making people kind of get what you're saying.
That's awesome. Good for you, Michael. Before I let you go, how can our listeners stay up to date with all the great things you're out there doing, whether it's following you online or it's on social media?
Where's John? Can I just... John, what'd you say? I have fear. Social media kind of scares me a little bit, only because I don't like sometimes I have a friend of mine that we don't keep score when we play golf because we just don't want to remind each other how poorly we're doing. I'm on Facebook. I'm pretty easy to look up. I just look at it as I like reading blogs. I like listening to podcasts. I like listening to what everybody else is doing. I'm pretty comfortable with my own skin, but I don't spend a lot of time on Instagram or any of those things anymore because there's so much going on that I don't totally agree with. And it's easy to just kind of be in my own world sometimes, but I'm around. I'm at TPI. You know, I'm easy to get a hold of.
Well, Michael, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come and be a part of the show. You're fantastic, my friend. I hope we get this privilege again soon.
You will. Maybe not six times as quick as John, but I'll be. You can call me anytime.
And I appreciate
a shout out to Tom Patrick, by the way. Thank him for introducing us.
Absolutely. Michael, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
Good luck, Michael.
David. Thanks. Bye.
That is Michael Gibson. And I love that. Did I do everything I could today to help people? How fantastic is that? If we all said that to ourselves before we laid our head down on the pillow or before we closed our eyes for the night, how great of a world would we live in? That's one of the things, you know, that I found out about Michael very early. And again, I had a brief time with him there at demo day, but leading up to being introduced to him and then following that time, walking with Tom around some of the other places that we were out there to see, he was telling me about how great Michael is. And he certainly lived up to that billing and more. So when you have somebody that's got that kind of passion and has that kind of mindset, and says to themselves every night that I do everything I could to help people, that's all you can ask for from a human being, first of all, and then from somebody that you're going to trust your golf game to, because you know that guy is going to kill himself to try to figure out how he can help you play better golf. And that's what you're looking for, right? When we're all trying to, whether it's taking a lesson or getting fit, we're looking for somebody that can help us play better golf. And Michael's going to be that guy that tries to do that at the utmost that he can. And that, to me, that's awesome. That's just absolutely awesome. To have that kind of life philosophy is fantastic. So hopefully we get the privilege of having Michael back on the show again sometime very soon. Up next is going to be David Turner. David is one of the developers of a new private golf course down in Miaka City, Florida, just a little bit east of Sarasota. The name of the club is the Saletta Golf Club. He's working alongside Nick Price and David Ledbetter on that project. Before I get to David, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, They are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2under.com. 2under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls. All so they can get you the perfect fit.
All right, now next on the tee with me is David Turner. David is one of the developers of a new golf course called Saleta Golf Club down in Miami City, Florida, which is just a little bit east of Sarasota. He is developing the course alongside Nick Price, who is designing it. David Ledbetter is going to have a fantastic teaching facility on site there as well. It's a members-only club that's going to be on par with some of not only the best in the state of Florida, but anywhere in the world. It's going to set the standard for what private clubs should be. And I couldn't be more honored that I get to have David with me here this week on Next on the Tee. Hey, David, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Chris, for having me.
David, I got to ask, I mean, boy, the Saleta Golf Club just sounds absolutely out of this world for the things that you guys are trying to do and bring to that area. Tell me, how'd you first get involved with it?
Well, it's been fun so far, but really we got involved with it because one of my partners, Charles, is local to the Sarasota area. He grew up there for 20 plus years, recently moved back. We came across this property from a mutual colleague of mine who knew the owner. And interestingly, the owner, he's an avid golfer himself and really wanted to develop this into a high-class golf facility and golf course and community. But just, you know, he had the vision. He didn't really have a lot of development and background experience. So we were able to connect with them and we looked at it and it seemed to be a great opportunity.
So why Miami, Florida? Boy, there's almost literally nothing anywhere near there except maybe a handful of residents. How'd you pick that property?
Interestingly enough, Sarasota, as it continues to expand in all of Florida, it continues to stretch outwards. So, I mean, Miami City itself, it seems a little far out there, but I mean, Lakewood Ranch, which is, I think it's been consistently one of the top five MSAs for the last number of years, continues to expand out that way. So we're under 20 minutes to Lakewood Ranch. And as development continues out there, they're expanding roadways out there. You know, we feel like we're going to be in close enough to the heart of Lakewood Ranch and Sarasota area. But we also wanted something that just wasn't surrounded by development either. I mean, this is going to be a pure golf play, very limited crossover from the residential side. And when you're out on the golf course, you feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere, which was the intent of it.
You guys had the groundbreaking ceremony back in early December, so you're a little over 3 months into it. Give us an update. What's taking place so far? How's it coming?
It's moving along well. I mean, we're just over a month away, maybe 5 weeks away from starting to grass the first of the holes. I think we're about 12 of the holes fully shaped or at least rough graded. We have about six of the greens in, a lot of the lakes, a lot of the natural habitats. We actually just started last week. We've moved into our own self-created nurseries, about 4,000 trees so far, and we just started replanting those back onto the golf course.
Wow. The articles that I've read say construction is supposed to take about a year. Do you think the golf course is going to be ready to play in November or December?
Yeah, I mean, we're targeting first week of November for the grand opening and the first day of play for members. So we feel like based on the momentum that we have and the schedule that we're doing, that we're going to really be ready probably November.
So I got to ask you, what's it been like trying to put this golf course together, working alongside a Nick Price?
I mean, Nick and David and Wayne, who's Nick's counterpart, have been fantastic. So all myself and my partners, we've all had a lot of different development experience. But obviously to create a course like this, take somebody like Nick, who's as much of an artist as he is an architect there. So it's been fun. It's been a learning experience on the design side, but it's been really full tilt here for the last 3 months, and it's been nonstop as well.
I read that you guys have got 2 miles of the Myakka River running alongside of the course, plus 150 acres of wetland that are going to remain untouched. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is about 2 miles along the Myakka River. There's a beautiful wetland preserve down there. There's actually a few miles of existing, I guess you can call them walking trails along the river, and some other great features and amenities there. To your earlier question about why out there, why Myakka, we wanted to create something really natural and open and untouched, if you will, and a big part of that, and Nick was a great help, but we went to him day one saying we don't want to touch any of the wetland. And I think it was 30 plus routings and designs that we worked on with them. And one of those key factors of so many designs was to find a great course layout that integrated with the wetlands and the natural area while not encroaching on them.
I also read that David Ledbetter's practice facility is going to be amazing. About 30 acres of land, all the state-of-the-art equipment and technology. Talk about his vision and the huge practice area that you guys are putting in for him there.
Well, that's one of the areas that I'm focusing on right now is just fixing the design for the indoor portion of the training facility. And then Nick is working with David and with Wayne to finalize the outdoor design. But yeah, it's just about 30 acres. It's going to be about 13,000 square foot. It's going to be fitness, wellness, and performance center. So there'll be the typical area that you would have a gym, strength, cardio, fitness, spa, locker room with the saunas, the cold plunges, all that. But what we really did here that we wanted to focus on was a golf specific area. So there'll be a separate golf putting studio, golf fitness and swing studio, a video studio, and then three plus indoor hitting bays, indoor outdoor hitting bays, and then additional outdoor area as well.
David, just a couple more before I let you go. And I hear that none of the homes that are going to be constructed will be anywhere near the golf course, that you're going to preserve the natural environment in and around the golf course. Talk about why preserving that natural area is so important to you guys.
The land lent itself to it, really. So there's some homes that will be somewhat visual from the golf course. They'll be well divided and buffered. But that's just on really one and a half of the holes. The rest of the holes, you won't see another residence. You won't see really any other people other than whoever's golfing out there. And that was important to us because, again, if we're going to do it, we didn't want to. We're not in the development business per se to do, a housing first with a golf focus to help sell the lots. This project actually happened to be golf focused. There are lots, there's 91 lots that will be, a benefit to the golf course. We'll have some local members that live right on site, but really we wanted to focus on the golf training and the other amenities, racket sports, aquatics, things like that, to just make it a pure golf play, if you will.
I also read that there are going to be cabins available for members, guests to come stay near the golf course. I'm picturing cabins like we see around Augusta National. Is that what you're shooting for?
Again, we're a little more rural, so we call it the modern farmhouse feel. So very nice, very well appointed, great cottages inside. We'll have anything from 4+ bedrooms. So, somebody can come down as a foursome. You can stay there. You can play there. And these cottages, they're up to 14 cottages and they are for any of the local and national members. So we're going to have a contingent of local members. We're going to have a number of national members. And really, for the locals, it's for people to come out and stay and play and have fun or spend the weekend. And then nationals, we want a great place for people to come down, stay right on site, play one day, stay the night, play another day, or as much as they like.
David, for our listeners who are now excited about coming to see what you've got down there at Saleta Golf Club, how can they get more information? How can they check it out online or on social media?
Well, we have a number of articles and social media that we post from time to time, but the best is saletagolf.com. We try to update that every few weeks. You can see really, you know, accurate and up-to-date construction photos, progress, updates, and we also link to other news articles as well there.
Well, David, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and tell us all about what you guys got going on down there. It sounds like it's going to be one of the great facilities, not only in our country, just around the world. The golf course, the amenities, everything you guys are going to have down there just sound outstanding.
Well, thank you so much. It's coming along well. We're really enjoying it, and we're excited for people to see the finished product this fall.
David, take care. All the best to you and your family and everyone down there working at Saleta Golf Club. I hope you'll come back as you guys get ready for the grand opening and update us on how things are going.
Absolutely. We'll keep you updated. Thank you, Chris.
Take care, David. That is David Turner. Again, it's Saleta Golf Club. S-O-L-E-T-A is the spelling of Saleta. So saletagolf.com is the website. And from everything that I've read, and there, like he said, there are a number of articles out there. You just do a Google search on Saleta Golf Club, and you're going to find a whole lot of information. But it just sounds like it is just going to be an amazing, amazing facility for all the things that they are going to do, for how they're preserving a lot of the natural surround and the land, and then putting in a golf course around that. So it's not like they're putting in a golf course and everything is just, you know, things are going to get filled in and all that sort of stuff. They're doing a lot of work to preserve all of the natural grasses and the lay of the land. It's going to be a nature preserve out there. So you know it's going to be fantastic. Nick Price is involved. David Ledbetter is involved in, along with David. So you know this is going to be a fantastic place. So I can't wait to hear how it turns out. And when they get to the grand opening towards the end of the year, whether that's November or December, I'll stay in touch with David and hopefully we get him back on to talk about what the finished product looks like. Coming up next is going to be the CEO of Popticals, Gary DeSalvo. Popticals, for my money, are the best sunglasses on the planet. They are just absolutely wonderful. Like I say, the best ones that I've ever worn, and they are so great out on the golf course. Before I get to Gary, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's S-Q-A-I-R-Z.com. Looking for the ultimate Myrtle Beach golf experience? Well, it's only a click away. Check out the two-play special at two of America's most awarded public golf courses, Caledonia Golf and Fish Club and True Blue Golf Club. They are low country masterpieces featuring two iconic Mike Strantz designs. Play these two incredible courses for one great price. Visit CaledoniaGolfAndFishClub.com to learn more about the two-play special and book your tee time today. Again, that's CaledoniaGolfAndFishClub.com. All right, now making his next On the Tee debut with me is Gary DeSalvo. Gary is the CEO of Popticals, some of the top sunglasses that you're going to find anywhere out there on the market, not only just for playing golf, but for anything you're doing outdoors. They're fantastic. Do a quick Google search on them, Popticals, and you're going to find just how great these sunglasses are, and you're going to find people bragging about them everywhere you look, and rightfully so. I love the pair that I've got. And I couldn't be more excited. I get to talk tonight with Gary and have him as a part of this week's show. Gary, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
So, Gary, when I was doing the research on you and how you got involved with Popticals, I read that the brand kind of fell in your lap. Talk about how that happened.
Yeah, so we weren't necessarily looking for a sunglass brand. My wife and I were looking at a business to potentially run together, something to add on to her existing business. And through that search, yeah, you know, we saw this listing. It was a very vague description. And, you know, we just started asking more questions and started abandoning the search that we were looking at for the complimentary business. And, you know, it was one of those things where first things first, we saw the compact nature of it, which is a great feature. And that had us really excited. But once we actually started trying them on and realizing the lenses, if you take that compact feature out of the equation, these are truly premium sunglasses. They look and feel great. And the lenses are incredible. For me, instantly, I started trying on my other sunglasses side by side and realizing that these are the clearest lenses I have or have ever worn. And so you put that combination together, it just seemed like a no-brainer.
So let's expand on that as you talk about the compact design. What you guys have at Popticals, the unique rail system, and so many other features that sets them apart from other sunglasses. Talk about that.
Right. So the actual inventor, the idea, he was skiing. He was on a ski trip and wanted to have his sunglasses up, you know, when he was on the mountain, right? But there's nowhere to really put it when you're skiing. And so that's where the idea came about. Like, I wish I had a pair of sunglasses that, you know, I can keep with me somehow or clip onto my vest so I could always have them. And so being the inventor that he was, he went in, tinkered, and really the wraparound feature is which is featured on all Popticals. You know, there are some folding sunglasses out there, but that wouldn't really work with the wraparound feature. It would make it too big because of that. So he had to come up with a solution on how to get it to be as small as possible. And so what came with that is the slide rail. And so it's a patented technology. Essentially, and what happens is one lens, once you separate it from them, there's a magnet, so you can barely tell, or you can, in most cases you can't tell that they even are compactable. Once you separate it, you slide one lens over the other, and then it, like you said, it folds up, the temples fold in, and the cases are made to be as small as possible for the sunglasses to fit in. So each frame style has its own case. And like you said, I mean, I walk around the warehouse here in the office at times with two or three in my pocket. And it's just like anything else in your pocket. You don't even think about it.
You mentioned the lenses. Talk about the Nidef polycarbonate lenses that you have and how they have the same clarity as glass.
Yeah, so actually, the Nidef lenses are actually made out of nylon. So most sunglasses are made out of glass or polycarbonate. The glass aspect of it, right? Glass is the clearest view you can get, but it's also the heaviest. And polycarbonate is extremely durable, but not quite the view that you're going to get out of glass. So what nylon does is, and that's kind of where the Nidef trademark came from. The nylon gives you the clarity of glass, still optically pure, but also has the durability, similar durability to polycarbonate. So when you put those two together, it's giving you, you know, the best of both worlds. But the bonus with that one is that it's the lightest of all three. So between the lenses themselves and the actual frames, each pair of popticals weighs about 1 ounce. So extremely light on your face. You can wear them all day. You're not going to get headaches like you might with polycarbonate lenses after 6 or 8 hours of wearing sunglasses. So the nylon, I think, is what's the differentiator with these lenses. And again, I mean, you've worn them, Chris. I'm sure you've seen just the clarity and you know, that's out there once you put these on.
Yeah, 100%. And I tell you, Gary, one of the things that I like is how much glare these glasses block out. So when we're out there playing golf, particularly when we're on the green, taking that glare out, they're going to help us read the break a whole lot better, help us putt a whole lot better. Talk about the advantage we can have by wearing these when we're out there playing the game of golf.
Yeah, it's perfect. You're like teeing me up here, right? So, So Carl Zeiss and Zeiss Lenses is actually the lens manufacturer for reuse, and they're known for obviously their quality. So the lenses that you have, our most popular line is our golf line. And the reason being is they are made specifically for golf. So it's not just the glare. There's some other things you may notice while you're out there. So first of all, what most people don't know is that, you know, for every different activity you're doing, there's a different combination of lens colors and or polarized or non-polarized you want to have for that specific activity. In golf, it's a game of distance, yards, right? Targets. So what you want is polarized lenses. What they do is they're very popular and they're known for removing glare, but what they do is they actually flatten the image. And that's the last thing you'd want to do on a golf course. So if you're wearing polarized sunglasses on the golf course, it's actually impacting your depth perception. And, you know, I've heard some people joke to me after I told them that, well, that's what's wrong with my putting. And the reality is that probably is, has something to do with your putting and your distance. So our lenses are for golf specifically are non-polarized. And that, again, that's going to help increase, enhance your depth perception, along with the purity of the lenses. The other big benefit of the golf sunglasses design is the lenses are purple and violet for golf. And so at first you might say purple and violet, why? Green is one of the most receptive colors to the eye, and golf courses are just consumed with the color green. And you may not even realize how loud it is or how much an impact it can have on you. And so one of the things you can even test out, Chris, is after wearing them for, let's say, a half hour or so, and your eyes adjust, just pull them up and look at the ground. It'll feel like a flashlight's being shined right in your eyes just from the color green. And so what purple and violet do is they help filter that green color out. So you can actually see the contrast within the green on the putting surface. And so you'll see some patches that are a little darker, some that are a little lighter, and that's actually telling you the story of the green as well. So when you combine those two, you have the enhanced depth perception, which is going to get you to be more true to the number that you're actually seeing. So you're putting to that number. But then also you'll see minor contours and ridges within the green just based on that coloration. Those darker patches are going to show you that that grass is growing down towards you. Lighter patches will show that it's growing up. And so you can use that to help determine little parts of the break that you might not have been able to before.
That's fantastic. So, Gary, you talk about combinations because Popticals are geared towards outdoor enthusiasts, not just golfers, people who like fishing. You mentioned skiing at the top. People like to go out hunting. Just if you're an outdoor enthusiast, these glasses are fantastic for you. Talk about the different styles and combinations and what makes each one unique.
Yeah, so it's a great point you bring up. And outdoor enthusiasts, definitely what they're geared toward. But we actually, you know, when Dana and I first got involved, one of the things we were thinking about is just from the branding perspective is the tagline, which we use, which is for everywhere you're going, because we realized, you know, with these, they are for everywhere you're going. We have a lot of styles geared towards the different activities. But the first thing I thought of was going to a concert with her, going into, you know, it's daylight when you go to the concert or sporting event and it's night at the end. She's not going to want to carry my glasses. So I got to figure out if I'm going to bring them or leave them on my head or whatever might be the case. And now they could just fit in my pocket. And so I think generally anybody who's active, these will fit for. As far as the different kind of combinations we have, fishing obviously is one of them that we have, right? And so for fishing, it's not just the one size fits all. Depending on the conditions, like I spoke about with golf being non-polarized and purple, if you're fishing offshore, that's a different combination of lenses that you would want. You would want a blue mirror and a gray base to help you see that through that blue water. If you were lake fishing or fishing in rivers, different conditions there, that'd be a different, those would be different combinations. And actually fishing lenses absolutely need to be polarized. For skiing, we have skiing lenses, and you can easily find all these and information about why on our website. So I'll spare you the great, great detail. For hunting as well, again, depending on the conditions in the area you're hunting in, it might be a different combination of lenses. Actually, if you're hiking and those types of things, the golf sunglasses actually work great for that. It's kind of accomplishing the same thing for you. And then from another specialty line, we also partnered with Mossy Oak to get their patterns on our glasses, on a few pairs of our glasses. So we have some different fishing and hunting lenses from a style perspective with the Mossy Oak pattern on it as well. So those are the kind of verticals that we talk about where we do have a pretty good selection from. We do have one more that's actually going to be hitting the market. We're going to launch it in May, which is a ballistics lens, which also doubles as safety eyewear, which is great. We're finding a lot of buzz about that already. And it, you know, obviously with that one, we need to have that high security with those lenses. And so they meet ANSI Plus certification and also the military certification for those lenses. But every single pair, all compact, they're all made in Italy, hand touch. They all use those Zeiss lenses with the NIDEF technology. And again, they all fold up to fit in your pocket. So just a great array of sunglasses, 135 different variations total, 11 different frame styles. So something for everyone.
Indeed. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to clarify that you talked about. First of all, how they fit in your pocket, right? One of the things that we tend to do, we golfers tend to do, is when we're wearing our sunglasses at the end of the round, we take them off, we fold them up however we can, we throw them in our golf bag, and then the next time we go play, we pull them out, and they're either broken or they're scratched. Your case, your hard case that these fold up into are perfect so that that doesn't happen. Talk about folding it up and then that hard case that you get to have when you get these lenses.
Yeah, the hard case is a critical part to the design, right? So essentially, like I said, they're made to be as small as possible, but they are made, the whole shape of it and everything in the hard shell nature is designed to truly protect the glasses. We've done a lot of tests trying to break it, trying to smash it. I don't recommend doing that, obviously, you know, but it will protect. If it falls, it'll protect your glasses. In your bag and you're rustling around, or you know, hopefully your bag doesn't fall off the cart or fall when you stand it up, but any of those scenarios, as long as it's in the case, there'll be no damage to your glasses whatsoever. They'll be safe in there. So, and again, I think when you talk about putting in the bag, you can put them in the bag, even in that small wallet pocket if you want. That's how small it'll be, but they also come with a carabiner, every single pair, so you can easily just clip it onto the side of the bag if you like as well. To make it easy, clip it anywhere you want. So, to your point, just not throwing it up. I've lost several pairs myself with that, throwing them in with that soft case inside of the bag, and it gets smushed against somebody else's bag or whatever the case may be.
You mentioned 135 variations. You've got a quiz on your website, again, popticals.com, to help us figure out which one is the perfect one for us. Walk us through that process.
Right. So we knew that there's a lot. Right now, we only sell these online. And so we wanted to do as many things as possible to make it that in-person experience as we could. So with the quiz itself, really, we tried to make it to where you're answering. I think it's 6 or 7 questions. They're very simple questions, just simply about the types of activities that you like. And we have pictures there. You could just click on the ones that you like, the colors you might be interested in. And what it's doing is it's funneling it down to some recommendations. And so we're not just going to spit out at the end of the quiz just one pair that works for you. You'll see the grading system. So the top row will likely be ones that, you know, you answered 7 of the 7 questions to match this pair perfectly. And you can look all the way down at every single pair if you want to see which ones you didn't match perfectly. So I think that really helps guide people. And most of the time, they don't even come off that first row is really where it's at. We've done a lot of work pressure testing it and trying to figure out, you know, make sure that logic was correct.
You guys also provide the opportunity to virtually try them on with Mira. Talk about that.
Yeah, so that was another, to my point before, trying to get it to where, you know, you can see what they look like on your face. So it's a very simple process. You can do it from your phone. If you have a camera on your computer, you can do that as well. You can simply look at the pair that, you know, you're checking out and just hit the button. In less than a second, the glasses will pop right on your face. And it's pretty true to size. as long as you're not moving the phone, you know, further away and closer, or being in a different position when you hit the button, the screen goes black for about a quarter second as soon as you hit the button. And what the camera is actually doing is measuring your pupillary distance at that point to make sure it can match it to your face, just like it should look in real life. So it's a great feature, and we're continuing to look to add features like that in different ways to provide that experience for customers, just because one thing we've noticed is as soon as people see these and touch these and get them in their hands, you know, they're really falling in love. But we're trying to do everything we can on the website until they're more widely available to have people comfortable enough that they're picking a pair that's going to work for them and fit them and matches the activities that they're hoping to do with them.
You guys were a finalist at the ING Industry Honors for their Ingenuity Award. That's fantastic stuff. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, just being a couple months out, that was great. Great opportunity for us. And, you know, those are the types of things that keep us going. Just a lot, the recognition like that, and some of the people like yourself that have actually tried on and are helping to validate them. It's exciting.
You guys are also partnering with Mossy Oak. Talk about your partnership with them.
Yeah, so Mossy Oak is a great brand. They obviously fishing and hunting is their main audience. And so knowing that our glasses match up to that, we partner with them to get some of their patterns actually embedded onto our frames. So right now we have seven different frames that actually have that Mossy Oak pattern. And it is, for those that aren't familiar with Mossy Oak, I mean, they're the number one camouflage brand, you know, in the United States, at least, but I think in the world. And so very popular, almost all the camo you see out there is usually a Mossy Oak pattern. And so very loyal customer base, very committed to outdoors and outdoor activities. And it's just a good match for both of us. And so I think, yeah, you know, especially with the compact element, it definitely works. So seven pairs, different combinations of lenses for different types of fishing and or hunting that are with those lenses, and even everyday wear. So that was a big one for us, especially early on to get that going.
Gary, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they follow you guys and go out there and get their sunglasses, whether it's on your website or they're also following you on social media?
Yeah, so all the social media channels, it would be at Popticals, and we regularly post there. On our website, it's popticals.com, and a lot of the features we were discussing are on there. For the golfers out there, we actually also have an education center, a NIDEF Golf Education Center. It's geared specifically towards the golf glasses, and the reason we did that is we partnered with Dr. Craig Farnsworth, the putt doctor. We sent him a pair of glasses. He's a very well-known putting instructor to the pros and major champions. And he's also an eye doctor. So he's a good person for us to send the glasses to. He endorsed them. And he also helped us generate content to help you understand what the colors are that you're seeing, as well as putting in some green reading tips in there to help. Not only here's what you're seeing differently, and now that you are, here's how you can actually apply that, become a better putter. So we plan on continuing to add education like that because of the feedback from our customers. You know, you are seeing something different. Now, let's not just sell you a pair of glasses where you see something different. Let's make sure you get the most out of those for the activities you're doing. So great information on that on the site as well, but popticals.com.
Well, Gary, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I tell you what, I'm a huge fan of the glasses. I think they're the best golf glasses that I've ever used. And I tell you what, I actually keep them in my car. I just wear them for every day because obviously I want to be a better green reader and I want to have better vision and better depth perception when I'm out there playing golf. But in my car and for everyday use, if I'm out walking around in the sun, I think these things are just the best pair of sunglasses I've ever owned.
We got me smiling from ear to ear, Chris. Thanks for having us, and I appreciate the kind words.
Absolutely. Take care, Gary. All the best to you and Dana. I wish you guys much success. I hope we'll get the opportunity to have you back on the show again soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Chris.
Take care, Gary. That is Gary DeSalvo. And again, Popticals, P-O-P-T-I-C-A-L-S is the spelling of Popticals, popticals.com. And I'm not saying it just because I just had Gary on the show. I mean, these things are fantastic. Again, as he talked about how they fold up nice and neat and they're easy to open back up and align. Everything is perfect. So for me, the glare that these things reduce in your everyday life and when you're out there playing golf are just second to none. And then I love the idea of this hard case that you get to fold them back up and put them in. Look, how many of us, just like Gary talked about a moment ago, have taken our golf glasses off, thrown them in the bag, even if you've got a little soft, you know, carrying case there or a protective case around them. And you go back and the next time or one of the next times you go play golf or go to the driving range, you go to pull them out and they're broken. The arm is broken. The lenses are scratched and all that sort of stuff. This hard case keeps that from happening. I mean, it's fantastic. Not only and second of all, these things are comfortable to wear. How many times you put a pair of sunglasses on and like they start to hurt the back of your ears? Like Gary said, you end up with a headache after you've had them on for, you know, 9 holes, 12 holes, you know, deep into your round. All of a sudden, now they're not comfortable. They're not comfortable on your nose or your ears or that sort of thing. You end up with a headache or some other issue. So you take them off, you throw them in the golf cart and away you go. And now you hate them. That's not going to happen with these things. So look, like I say, just because Gary's on the show, it's not why I'm saying this, because he sent me a pair. And if I didn't like them, I wouldn't have had them on the show. These things are fantastic. Go out and look at your own. Again, look, you can look at them on your own face. They've got the technology for that. They've got, you know, dozens of styles and combinations. And you'll find the right one, whether you're playing golf, you're going fishing, you're out there skiing, or just like he talked about, going to the concert with your friend or your wife or your significant other. You're going to find the right pair for you. So go out there and check them out. Again, popticals.com. And like I say, hopefully we get to catch up with Gary and hear about the exciting things they're doing maybe a little bit later on in the year. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. I want to send out my sincere thanks again to John Mahaffey, Michael Gibson, David Turner, and Gary DeSalvo for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are former tour pro turned orthopedic surgeon Bill Mallon will be back with us. Another former tour pro, Scott Gump, will make his Next on the Tee debut. And then we'll get another return visit from Unicor's VP of Marketing, Greg Sabella. Looking forward to having Greg back as part of the show. So it's going to be fantastic, folks. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. Quick reminder that you can find the show available as a podcast just about anywhere you get your podcast content. In particular, we're out there on the Pittsburgh Tribune Review site. Just go to triblive.com, click on sports, and you'll find the show right there on the homepage of the sports section. You can also click on podcasts and you'll find Next on the Tee and a whole bunch of our more recent episodes available for you to stream right there. You can also find the show out on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audio Boom, and Player.fm. And as always, my thanks to the folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast on your favorite device on goodpods.com or the Good Pods app. But most of all, my sincere thanks to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.